Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, November 7th, 2025. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with Salvation Army, Christmas Season. Give with joy. Bell ringers will start to be seen today, Friday, with $400,000 in donations, the goal. Kyle Anderson and Joel Hawkinson have been Salvation Army bell ringers for several years. We work in two-hour shifts, Anderson said. We just go there and it's all set up, Hawkinson said. The Salvation Army kicked off its Christmas season Tuesday at a Golden K. Kiwanis, of which Anderson and Hawkinson are members. This year's theme is Give with Joy. We are all reminded that we can spread joy beyond hardships, joy beyond challenges, joy beyond differences, the agency stated in a news release announcing the kickoff. The community will begin seeing the first glimpse of the seasonal bell ringers on Friday, today, November 7th. This year's Christmas fundraising goal is $400,000. According to Jeff Daly, Development Director for the Salvation Army of Decatur in Macon County, the agency will focus more on bell ringing than they have in the past. Almost half of our fundraising goal comes from the bell ringing, he said. It's a tradition, but it's also a blessing to the community. To reach the goal, the Red Kettles will be in more locations. New this year will be two new Walgreens stores and Kenny's Ace Hardware. Returning locations will include Hobby Lobby at Hickory Point Mall, Rural King on Mount Zion Road in Decatur, Farm and Fleet on Southside Drive, starting on November 7th. And both Walmart locations, Sam's Club, will begin November 15th. All three Kroger stores, along with the South Shore's Walgreens, Walgreens on U.S. Route 36, and Kenny's Ace Hardware on Mount Zion Road, will see the bell ringers on November 28th. But this means that we need more volunteers, Daly said. The need has never been greater. Administration has eliminated other fundraiser events from the past, including the Red Kettle Gala and the benefit concert. We really want to focus on the bell ringing mission, Daly said. Instead, the Salvation Army encourages groups, churches and schools, organizations, as well as families and individuals to register for bell ringing opportunities. It's a great way to give back to the community, Daly said. That's one thing that Decatur does best. Other suggestions for fundraising included hosting themed events at businesses such as Jean Day for employees, collection days for food or toys, selling the Red Kettle blend coffee, or setting up a coin bank at Tabletop Red Kettle. Like most of the local food pantries, the Salvation Army's been seeing a rise in people needing services. Being able to bell ring and fundraise and make our focus on that enables us to give back more to the community, Daly said. The Red Kettles aren't the only Salvation Army holiday image. Located near the center of Hickory Point Mall, three angel trees have been set up with the information on area families hung as ornaments. The giant red kettle is also on display. That again shows how much the need is, Daly said. According to the Kiwanis members, bell ringing is an ideal opportunity to promote local organizations and clubs. We generally wear our Kiwanis stuff, Anderson said. I wear my Kiwanis hat and sweatshirt, Hawkinson said. And the photos on the front page show Salvation Army Corps Officer Major Randall Summit announcing the Christmas season fundraising goal of $400,000 at the Golden K. Kiwanis meeting in Decatur on Wednesday, November 5th. And he's talking with the Salvation Army Randall Summit. Salvation Army Red Kettle Bell Ringers. For more information on becoming a Salvation Army Red Kettle Bell Ringer, call 217-428-4000. 4672, extension 104. Again, 217-428-4672, extension 104. Or email jeff.daly, D-A-L-Y, at usc salvationarmy.org, or visit registertoring.com, registertoring.com. And the second photo here shows the red kettles themselves, and there's a decorated Christmas tree behind the kettle in this picture. The Decatur Salvation Army kicks off the Christmas season Red Kettle Campaign at the Golden K Kiwanis of Decatur meeting on Wednesday, November 5th. Also on the front page, Illinois Corrections. Advocates, families decry prison mail scan program. This is from Springfield, Capital News, Illinois. Families of Illinois prison inmates and legal advocates spoke out this week against a new program at the Illinois Department of Corrections that restricts incarcerated people's access to incoming mail and in some cases only allows them to see electronically scanned images of letters and other correspondence. IDOC announced in August that it was launching the program as an effort to prevent drugs and other kinds of contraband from getting inside state prisons. But critics of the program argued it violates prisoners' civil rights and said that there's little evidence to suggest such a program will have any effect. "We don't argue that the drug problem is here," Juanita Hernandez, who's husband has been incarcerated, told an administrative panel. "We know that it's here. We just don't think that's the way that it has gone, that this has gone about is fair at all." Hernandez spoke at a public hearing Tuesday on a proposed change to IDOC's administrative rules that would make the mail screening program permanent. "The program is currently operating under an emergency rule that IDOC promulgated in August, but emergency rules can only be in effect for 150 days. Lawmakers have already expressed skepticism about the program. At a meeting in September, the General Assembly's Joint Committee on Administrative Rules formally objected to the emergency rule. While that objection did not block the rule from remaining in effect through January, it sent a message to the department that it will need to make significant changes and listen to feedback from incarcerated people's families, attorneys, and other interested stakeholders if it wants to make the rule permanent. The emergency rules. Under the emergency rules, most incoming mail addressed to prisoners, including letters, photographs, or drawings made by their children, is scanned into electronic images, which the prisoners can access on computer tablets that are issued to them. Some mail, such as legal correspondence from an attorney, is supposed to be exempt from scanning. IDOC launched the program after the union representing correctional officers issued a report last year that described an explosion in illegal drug use in the state prison system that was endangering the health and safety of correctional workers. It suggested that drugs, including synthetic drugs, as well as paper soaked in wasp spray that prisoners could burn and inhale fumes from, were getting into the prisons through unscanned mail. Tennille Fitzgerald, president of the local union representing officers at the Lawrence Correctional Center, said working conditions in the prison before the mail scanning program was implemented were unacceptable. "Prior to mail scan being implemented at our facility, you couldn't walk into a housing unit without smelling the acrid burning smell of chemicals or paper or smoke in the cell houses," she told the panel, and sometimes it was so bad that you could even see smoke haze on the wings. Every month, we would have employees who are out of work because of exposures to these unknown substances. Since the department began scanning mail, she said, conditions have greatly improved. It's a relief not to leave work with a headache every day, she said. Since scanning the mail, we have gone entire weeks with no incidents involving intoxicated individuals. Criticisms of the policy. But Wendell Robinson, executive director of the Restore Justice Foundation, a group that advocates for less punitive criminal justice policies, said that it was inhuman to cut off inmates' access to physical mail. He said the program would likely have little effect on contraband getting into prisons. People often read and reread mail to remind them of their support system, he said. To digitize physical mail is to eliminate the art, beauty, and emotion, the texture, and even a scent that is unique to physical correspondence. Additionally, there is no evidence to support the proposed permanent rules will be effective in stopping contraband from entering the IDOC. Ben Rudell, director of criminal justice policy at the American Civil Liberties Union of Illinois, also questioned whether any evidence supported the idea that the mail was a major source of contraband. He said limiting inmates' access to mail raised many legal concerns, including First Amendment rights of prisoners and the people who correspond with them. Courts have recognized that the timing of speech is sometimes as important as its content, an observation that has particular force when it comes to mail concerning legal medical matters, he said. The lack of limits on the access, use, and sharing of scanned mail will likely have a chilling effect on the speech of some friends and family who may be less forthright and personal in their letters to their incarcerated loved ones, or may decide it's not worth sending anything at all. The Joint Committee on Administrative Rules is scheduled to interview the policy again at its next monthly meeting, November 18th, in Chicago. And the photos on page 2 show Illinois Department of Corrections Director Latoya Hughes listening during a public hearing Tuesday, November 4th, 2025, on a proposed administrative rule allowing the agency to scan inmates' incoming mail to reduce the flow of drugs and other contraband entering the prisons. And she's sitting behind a desk with other corrections employees sitting behind her, listening. And then there's a smaller picture. Wendell Robinson, executive director of the Restore Justice Foundation, testifies before administrative panel Tuesday, November 4th, 2025, in opposition to an Illinois Department of Corrections program of scanning inmates' incoming mail to reduce the flow of drugs and other contraband into state prisons. And Mr. Robinson is standing at a podium in a room where people are listening to him. He's standing there with notes and a microphone. In more local and state news on page A3, Macon County Courts, police, man caught with 3,800 images of child sexual abuse. State police special agents said they raided a Decatur residence early Tuesday and seized computer files containing more than 3,800 videos and images of young children being raped and performing other sexual acts with adults and each other. A sworn affidavit quoted Harry O. Schull, 50, as admitting he had downloaded the images of child sexual abuse. Harry stated he has viewed and downloaded child pornography of victims under the age of 12 years old, said Special Agent Michael Holt, who signed the sworn affidavit. Schull was arraigned Wednesday in Macon County Circuit Court on 10 counts of reproducing child pornography. He also faces two charges of illegally possessing firearms after police also seized a rifle and handgun from his bedroom. Holt said police had been alerted to what Scholl was doing in August and launched an investigation. On that occasion, agents had come across more than 3,400 images. Later, in October, they had seen another 336 videos and images downloaded to an internet address that was traced to Scholl. Holt said a computer seized from Scholl's bedroom showed more downloaded child pornography involving a rape of a prepubescent female. Judge Lindsay Shelton told the Scholl he represented too much of a risk to public safety to be granted pretrial release and ordered him held in the Macon County Jail. The defendant will be back in court for a preliminary hearing November 19th when he will enter pleas to the charges against him. Maroa Forsyth grant to aid artifact preservation. Thanks to a grant from the Illinois State Historical Records Advisory Board, overseen by Illinois Secretary of State and State Archivist Alexi Janulius, Maroa Forsyth schools can preserve historical records, photos, and videos. The grant covers three of our collections, said Tina Horv, director of the archives for the district. One of them is just school board minutes, which go back to the 1800s. The other two are more exciting. Photographer Nelson Smith worked at ISU and was a Maroa graduate, and his family donated the collection from his early years, 1934 to 39, when he was in high school. During his high school years, Horv said, Smith was learning his craft and practicing by taking photos of sports and classroom activities. The third collection is film that was taken by William Dayton Keyes, who was a teacher in the district in the 1930s and later served as principal and superintendent. He ran the photography club and taught himself to use early video equipment. The grant funds will be used to purchase archival quality photo sleeves and boxes and to move film to archival storage reels to preserve those items as long as possible. The photos and film will also be stored digitally for viewing without risking the condition of the original prints. And there's a photo here of some students. In this 1989 photo, Maroa Forsyth High School students gather around a 1979 Malibu station wagon donated by Miles Chevrolet. The car will be given away as a grand prize during the post-prom party. And tells you can find more history at herald-review.com/archives. And it's a big station wagon. And there's lots of students, some sitting in. The side doors are open and the back is open. And students are sitting in and standing around in front of the high school, standing around the Malibu station wagon, and the high school's in the background. Local Briefs Homework Hangout holds pajama drive. Homework Hangout is sponsoring a Share the Love pajama drive to provide new pajamas, slippers, and robes to 100 families in need for Christmas. Drop off new sleepwear for all sizes, infants through adults, to Homework Hangout Club, Mrs. K Community Center, 249 South Webster Street, now through Monday, December 15th, between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. For information, contact Brenda Major or Stefan Dawson at 217-872-2306. Again, you can drop them off from now through Monday, December 15th from 9 to 5 at the Mrs. K Community Center at 249 South Webster Street. And if you need more information, contact Brenda Major, Stefan Dawson, 217-872-2306. State Museum features oral history for Route 66 anniversary. As part of the 100th anniversary of Route 66, in 2026, the Illinois State Museum has launched an online database of 100 oral histories about the Mother Road. The Route 66 Oral History Project database includes video-recorded interviews as well as world-searchable written transcriptions, according to a news release. Contributors include people who lived, worked, and traveled along Route 66 during its pre-interstate days, as well as individuals who promote, preserve, and interpret for future generations. After a revival of interest in the late 20th century, Route 66 has evolved into a popular road trip route, drawing millions of visitors from around the world each year. This project was made possible through the support of the Illinois State Museum Society and a grant from the National Park Service's Route 66 Corridor Preservation Program. For more information, visit illinoisstatemuseum.org or make a trip to the museum located at 502 South Spring Street in Springfield. Again, visit illinoisstatemuseum, all one word, .org, or visit the museum at 502 South Spring Street in Springfield. Donations for Barbie's Toy Drive needed. Vinny and Deborah Barbie's 24th annual Christmas Toy Drive in Decatur is up and running and looking for donations. New toys can be dropped at the Glass House at 2895 North Oakland Avenue and the Book Barn at 126 U.S. 51 in Forsyth. Donations need to be made by December 15th. Call 217-412-7427 for more details. Again, donations need to be made by December 15th, and the number is 217-412-7427. Also on the state and local page, excitement builds over Mega Millions. Jackpot soars to eighth largest in history. The drawing is today. The thrill is in the air, and it's growing right alongside the Mega Millions jackpot. After no ticket matched all six numbers in Tuesday's drawing, the grand prize has surged to an estimated $843 million for Friday's drawing, officially making it the eighth largest jackpot in the game's history. The cash option stands at $391.7 million, and players nationwide are lining up for their chance at a life-changing win. Friday's winning numbers were 11, 14, 17, 50, and 57, with the gold mega ball 6. Again, 11, 14, 17, 50, and 57, mega ball 6. If someone hits the jackpot this week, it would rank among the top biggest Mega Millions wins ever, just above the $810 million prize won in Texas in 2024 and right below Michigan's $1.05 billion win in 2021. November luck and record-breaking streaks. November hasn't seen a Mega Millions jackpot winner since 2016, but that could change soon. Historically, the month has produced 16 jackpots since 2002, including a memorable $326 million in New York on November 4, 2014. In the most recent drawing alone, more than 606,000 winning tickets were sold across the country, totaling $12.2 million in non-jackpot prizes. 12 tickets won the game's third-tier prize by matching four white balls plus the mega ball, with payouts ranging from $20,000 to $40,000, depending on the game's built-in multipliers. Since the jackpot was last won on June 27th in Virginia, when one lucky player took home $348 million, more than 11.7 million tickets have won prizes at all levels, worth nearly $274 million. Friday's drawing will mark the 38th consecutive drawing without a jackpot winner setting a record streak for the game. Mega Mania spreads nationwide. During this jackpot run, Mega Millions has awarded 17 second-tier prizes worth $1 million or more and 256 third-tier prizes ranging from up to $100,000, with winners spanning 40 states, from Michigan to Texas to Florida. Mega Millions Mania has become a national event, uniting players in hopeful anticipation. Top Mega Million jackpots. Well, this is just a lot of numbers here. I'm going to skip that. And the odds and the optimism. Winning the Mega Millions jackpot isn't easy. The odds of matching all six numbers are about 1 in 290 million. But that hasn't stopped millions from dreaming big. Even matching five numbers for a $1 million prize carries odds of about 1 in 12.6 million. Earlier this year, the game made some player-friendly updates, including raising the starting jackpot to $50 million, improving lower-tier prizes, and adding a built-in multiplier worth up to 10 times on non-jackpot prizes. Even the smallest win has doubled to $10, giving players more reasons to stay hopeful. However, The changes came at a cost. The price of the tickets went from $2 to $5, while getting rid of the optional megaplier, which cost an additional $1 per ticket. Now the non-jackpot multiplier is included in the price of the ticket. How to play. Select five white balls, 1 through 70, and one gold mega ball, 1 through 24, or choose an easy pick. / quick pick. Match all six numbers to win the jackpot. Winners can choose between the annuity option, paid over 30 years with annual increases, or the lump sum option. What are my options if I win? If you win the jackpot, you face two big choices: how to get paid and whether to stay anonymous. Winners can take the annuity, which pays a full amount over 30 years, or choose the cash option, currently estimated at $391.7 million before taxes. Lottery officials recommend that major winners consult a financial advisor and attorney before claiming their prize to understand tax implications, payout options, and privacy protection in their state. And that's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated November 7th, 2025. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.